listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, we'll talk masks. When do you need to wear them? When can you leave them off? And most importantly, why?
When people are choosing to appropriately follow the guidance and not necessarily wear their masks all the time outdoors, I've heard stories about being yelled at for not wearing their mask just in the last day or so since the order has come out, being told that they are being inconsiderate and people getting very upset with them. They are not doing anything that is against our guidance. They are actually following what's allowed in the guidance. And those changes were made by me as the health officer because it's permissible to do that now and still keep ourselves safe.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Before we get started, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help. So thanks. As vaccination rates rise and coronavirus case numbers fall, the rules about when we need to wear masks are relaxing a little. On May 4th, the San Francisco health officer issued an order bringing San Francisco's mask-wearing policy in line with federal guidelines and state rules. But as with everything pandemic-related, it's not exactly straightforward. To get a better understanding of the details and how these decisions are made, I talked with the person who issued that health order, San Francisco Health Officer Dr. Susan Phillip. To start, could you say a little bit more about your role? What does a county health officer do?
Yes. By California law, every county is required to have a local health officer, and that position is given certain duties and responsibilities, but also authority to enact local law, essentially, to keep people safe, particularly from communicable diseases, but from any health conditions. This is a position that is embedded within California state law.
And you stepped into this role after Tomas Aragon became the state's public health officer and director, and you were confirmed, actually, as health officer by the Board of Supervisors just a few days before this conversation. And when Aragon held this position, the San Francisco Chronicle referred to it as arguably the most powerful public official in San Francisco during the COVID-19 pandemic. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. You think that's the case?
Well, I think one of the things that the pandemic has shown, it didn't really give any new or additional abilities or authority to the health officer role, but it really uncovered, I think, for the public that may not have known very much about the role or that their county, like San Francisco, has a health officer, what authority exists. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic really demonstrated the ways in which the health officer position is supposed to work, is supposed to really try and assess new threats that may be previously unknown, and then try to really understand how to minimize the harm to the health of the public in the area in which they have responsibility. For me, that's the city and county of San Francisco, and for Dr. Aragon before me as well.
And can you talk about the collaboration between you and the director of the Department of Public Health, Dr. Grant Colfax, on setting and executing pandemic policy? Because I think that we as the public have heard a lot from Dr. Colfax during this pandemic and less from the health officer.
Yes. And Dr. Colfax is the director of the San Francisco Department of Public Health, is the leader for our overall public health efforts. Mm-hmm. In some settings, in some counties, the health officer and the public health director are the same person. That is not always the case. By state law, the health officer must be a physician who's licensed in California. And the health director does not necessarily have to be a physician, although sometimes they are. Dr. Colfax and I work very closely together. I am within the Department of Public Health. I'm part of the leadership team, his leadership team in the Department of Public Health. And he and I work really closely, very closely together, and are in near constant communication, talking about the local situation, how it's changing, how our health orders are going to adapt to meet the current needs. And that's been true throughout the pandemic.
So when health orders are issued, who is making them? It sounds like it's you, and then Dr. Colfax has input, or is this a totally collaborative effort?
Well, you know, it's the health officer that has the authority. Mm-hmm. So yes, it would be under my authority and my signature that goes onto the health orders. And I do work very closely with Dr. Colfax. So he does have input, but so do many other stakeholders, you know, especially as we have progressed in the pandemic and we have learned more about how to prevent transmission of COVID-19. There has been input integrated from our CDC colleagues, from state colleagues, other public health officials in the Bay Area and the region, and also from stakeholders and community members and, you know, elected officials. So there's a lot of input that gets integrated, but ultimately the orders do have my name on them. And I am the one that works with our city attorney team to issue them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about one of the most visible rules, which is around masking. How are San Francisco's rules around mask wearing and I guess other pandemic-related conduct established with respect to what other agencies issue? Because there's these three layers of rules that interact, as I understand it. There's the CDC, the state's rules, and then, you know, counties and cities. How do you incorporate and weigh what the other two are instructing?
Yes, I think this is a really important point because there are these different levels and which one is the one that people should be listening to in San Francisco mm-hmm. is really important. Importantly, for the most part, these will all align because they are best based on the best available science at any given time. And that does change, of course, throughout the course of the pandemic. But to take CDC, for example, as a national level organization, a federal agency, they have very important roles in understanding the science and the data and how our knowledge is evolving. And they put out guidance. So that guidance is extremely helpful. And often, because they have access to lots of data from lots of different sources, their guidance may be coming out a little bit ahead of some of the state or local guidance as well. And we base a lot of our understanding on CDC guidance.
Sorry, a little bit ahead. Do you mean in terms of they set this policy
in time
first?
Timing? Okay. The timing of mm-hmm. it, yes, that they see the data first and they will often be able to create the guidance to lead the states and the locals in their thinking. Mm-hmm. But however, this guidance, because we are the way our country is put together, and the states have the authority to create laws, and so do local entities. But the federal agency, unless it's very specific circumstances, such as interstate travel or international travel, they don't have the authority of law in most situations. They put out the guidance, but they don't create the law that would impact the behavior or the way a business has to operate in San Francisco. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. The state can create rules and laws that we as residents or businesses or other entities have to operate under legally. And that is what we see in, for instance, the current state blueprint system and the tier system. We are bound by law to follow those guidelines and those mandates from the state. But within the city and county, we have to work within the state framework and the state mandates. We can be stricter, if you will. We can be more health protective in some areas if we feel that that is necessary for the health of San Francisco. And it's my responsibility as health officer to determine when that is necessary. But we can't be looser, if you will. Mm-hmm. We cannot say, you know, the state currently says we have to wear masks indoors. As a local health officer, I would not be able to say, you know, I suddenly have decided that we do not need masks indoors in San Francisco. But I could say, for instance, you know, there are areas in which we might say we're a very dense city. We have special considerations. We know our local data and our local environment. And we think in these following ways, we should, you know, require masks additionally using masks as an example. We should use masks additionally beyond what the state requires. So there is that additional level in which the function of the local health officer is to understand the local environment and climate and know have a better sense of how to keep the local residents of the area over which they are responsible safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way those areas interact.
And we saw this, I think, with the shelter in place orders, where San Francisco and the Bay Area were quite a bit ahead of, I think, the rest of the state and certainly the country in ordering a shutdown, right?
Yes, that's right. That really does show the local health officers coming together, looking at the data and some of the guidance that was coming out from CDC, and having that ability to say that for the purposes of keeping the region safe, the health officers worked together, shared their understanding and their considerable experience at the time. And Dr. Aragon was a key part of that, a part of that group. To decide to do the shelter in place order and really lead the way for the rest of the country in doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we might get back to that later, but first let's talk more about masks, because San Francisco did adopt new rules about mask wearing quite recently, actually, at the beginning of May. Could we walk through these guidelines and what's behind them? Generally, it sounds like they're relaxing the rules a bit for outdoor settings that are not crowded. Are there highlights to these new rules that you want to mention right up front?
Yeah, I think that the important thing to think about is we want people to be thinking in terms of the general principles of how to stay healthy and how to avoid infections with COVID-19. And I think that's what you will see in the changes to the masking guidance. So we have known for a long time that masking is one of the key ways, prior to vaccine, one of the key ways that we had to prevent infections. And it's one of the things that has kept our residents, our fellow residents in San Francisco, safe and given us one of the lowest case numbers of any major city and lowest death rates of any major city. But we also know that outdoors is safer than indoors, and there have been increasing amounts of data, increasing studies that have really reinforced this. And that's now known, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And it makes sense because ventilation is one of the ways in which we decrease the amount of viral particles that are in the air around us. And in San Francisco, you know, we are lucky. We have a lot of natural ventilation outside with the wind and the fresh air. And that is a very important part of keeping ourselves safe. So outdoors, it makes sense to remove the masking requirement before we do it indoors, because the risk of transmitting from one to another outdoors is so much less. So that's the first general concept. We are keeping the indoor masking mandate, the requirement that we all wear masks indoors for now. But the first thing that we can remove and feel comfortable removing from the standpoint of keeping people safe and healthy is the outdoor mask mandate. And so that is what we have done. And we've been able to do that in part, you know, it is tied to vaccination. So we've been able to remove the mask mandate because our case numbers have come down so dramatically from, you know, their high point at the beginning of January, which were the darkest days of our third surge, our largest surge, have come down and remained stable, even in the face of reopening through all of our progression through the tiers. The vaccines are responsible for this. So before vaccine, it was masking and distancing. Those are still important parts of our response and our prevention, especially as we haven't gotten everybody yet vaccinated in San Francisco, as we are striving to do. But the vaccines have made it so that our case numbers are low enough that our chances of encountering people who outdoors, especially, who are infected and could transmit to one another are less. And when you couple that with the amount of decrease in risk that there is when you're outdoors compared to indoors, that's what made it the right time to remove the outdoor masking mandate.
The CDC said a little earlier this year, I believe, that fully vaccinated people do not transmit the virus. And then it walked that back a little bit, kind of saying, you know, we need a little bit more information to say this with certainty. I mean, it's so hard to reach certainty with anything when science is evolving. But I think it's really hard to keep up with those statements and to parse the CDC's parsing of the information for us with regard to what being fully vaccinated actually means. So at a city level, how does vaccination inform the rules about conduct? Is this primarily about herd immunity? Is it about an individual's likelihood of transmitting the virus while they're asymptomatic? Or is it about the aggregate risk of spread based on case rates? Any of these, none of these, a combination?
It is a combination. And I first and foremost want to say that the vaccines are incredible. And we've heard a lot of our leaders here in San Francisco and elsewhere really talking about the power of vaccines. Mm-hmm. And they are absolutely right. These are incredibly effective vaccines. And you know, just for comparison, the flu vaccine can be, you know, 50 or 60% effective at preventing the flu. And we still say, from a public health standpoint, get your flu vaccine, because it is the right thing to do for yourself and on a population level. So when you compare that to these vaccines, which in real world experience are 90% effective at preventing infections, they're really outstanding. And so the biggest thing, you know, and it is related to masks, that we want people to do is to get vaccinated, because I think that just gives people so much confidence that they are keeping themselves and their family and their community healthy. It is absolutely the number one through number 10 biggest things that we can do to continue moving forward, and to make sure that, you know, we ourselves are protected and our families are protected from infection. So everybody who's eligible for vaccine, which is everyone who's age 16 and up in San Francisco, should get their vaccine. And there are lots of available appointments, and there are slots, and we are trying to increase access through a variety of means, including through commercial pharmacies and other places where people can get vaccines in the city.
I'm speaking with Dr. Susan Phillip, health officer of the City and County of San Francisco. One part of your statement about the new mask order reads, quote, "We hope this news offers further incentive for people to get fully vaccinated as soon as possible. The longer you wait, including deferring your second shot if you need one, the greater the risk of contracting COVID-19 and passing it on to a friend, loved one, or coworker," end quote. Mass vaccination sites in the region are starting to close. Supply is now outpacing demand at some vaccine sites. Aside from the fact that, you know, half of San Franciscans over 16 have completed a two-dose vaccine course and about three quarters have gotten at least one shot, I mean, that's probably removing some of the demand. What's your sense for why people need incentives at this point to get vaccinated?
We want to pull every lever and make sure everybody understands the full spectrum of benefits. And we know that people's motivations may differ. Some people really want to get vaccines for their own health. Many of us do. Many of us, because we have family members that we want to protect and keep healthy and see again. And many for other reasons. And so for some people that really don't like masks, I think the message that I want to convey is that increasingly, we're going to see that there are fewer restrictions for masking and distancing that are going to come about for people who are fully vaccinated than for people who are unvaccinated. And the messaging around outdoor masking goes along with that also, because, you know, as the CDC has pointed out, there are situations, many situations in which people who are fully vaccinated don't have to worry about distancing and they can be unmasked outdoors. And we have said that as well locally in San Francisco. And there are just a few exceptions to that, which is being in a large crowd. And we've defined that as being 300 people or more. And federal requirements say that, you know, if you're taking Muni or if you're taking BART or waiting at a bus stop to get onto transit, you do need to wear a mask there. But for the most part, people who are vaccinated don't have to worry about trying to maintain distance, and they can really just move about the world. For people who are unvaccinated, you know, it's still recommended that they think about distancing, because it's really the vaccine that gives that extra high level of assurance that you're protected and you're protecting the rest of the community as well.
I'm hoping we could dig a little bit more into the details of that. I mean, you just named a crowd of 300 people or more is one situation in which even vaccinated people should be masked outdoors. And I think the household rules in general are a little confusing, because as I understand it, if you're fully vaccinated, it's okay to be inside unmasked with unvaccinated people as long as they're from the same household. And then once we reach the yellow tier, it'll also be okay for vaccinated people to dine unmasked but outdoors with multiple people, even if they're from separate households, but not if the group is up to 300 people or 300 people or more. I mean, can you talk a little bit about those distinctions?
Yes, and I do realize that it's confusing, which is again why we really are wanting people to think in terms of the general principles. Mm-hmm. Meaning that if you are with a group of people, your friends, and you know that all of you are vaccinated, then you don't have to worry about distancing and masking. Mm. Now, you could have one household that joins you, another friend who has not yet been able to get their vaccine or hasn't yet gotten their vaccine. First of all, I hope that people are able to tell their friends the benefits of getting vaccine. Mm-hmm. And we want everyone to encourage and help each other to do that at this point. But that one household can join as long as there's no one within the household who is at risk for becoming very, very sick from COVID-19. But what we can't have is multiple households that are unvaccinated, right? That unvaccinated household should be the only one in that group that is unvaccinated. And that's to try and allow for removal of masks, allow for a removal of distancing without putting unvaccinated people at risk unintentionally.
And just to be super clear about this, the reason for that is because the two unvaccinated households, members of those two different households, if they're unmasked in the same space, could spread to each other, right? Not because the vaccinated person could spread it to an unvaccinated person.
You know, correct. That is the public health reason for that rule. You know, people have talked about the very, very small risk that someone who is vaccinated might transmit unknowingly, not have symptoms, but actually be able to transmit. I think, you know, that's not an impossible scenario, but it is a very vanishingly small risk. So on a population level, from a public health standpoint, that is not a driving thought or a driving influence in our decision-making around orders and what we recommend that people do.
Okay, so let's talk about the scenario where in the yellow tier, it's okay for vaccinated people to dine unmasked but outdoors with multiple people, even if they're from separate households. This suggests that the people from different households should be masked, but the vaccinated person can be unmasked. Is that right?
You know, and this is the CDC's guidance, yeah. And it's not entirely clear. So what we try to do is make it as simple as we can within what is going to be safe for people to do. And so what we've said in San Francisco is that people may go without their mask outdoors if they are dining. And for people who are unvaccinated, you know, they should just be mindful that they may want to wear the mask for their own health and safety if they are doing that. And the safest thing to do is to have vaccinated people who are really spending time together in close proximity without masks, or again, having one unvaccinated household together. But we recognize that there might be situations in which there are a couple of unvaccinated households. In that case, you know, we don't recommend that. We recommend that people do keep their face coverings on at that time. But the order applies generally to everyone. So we are moving into a phase where we want people, now that their vaccines are here, we're no longer as much struggling with supply as we had been for so many weeks and mm-hmm. months. We want people to understand the benefits and to go and get vaccine. And we are going to be looking at ways to decrease barriers, because we know it's not equally easy for all communities and all neighborhoods to get vaccine. And that has been a key priority and a value of the city and of the Department of Public Health, to try new and innovative ways and let community leaders and members help guide how we should do that vaccine strategy. Mm-hmm. But as vaccine is more available, we want people to have the information. How do they keep themselves safer? And vaccine, again, is the number one way to do that. If people do not choose to have vaccine, then they should understand, again, the continued power of masking and distancing and choosing outdoors over indoors. The incentive or the reason to get vaccinated is because you don't have to worry about all of those issues. It gets much simpler if you're vaccinated.
Right, yeah. I want to clarify one thing that you mentioned briefly, which is you said that people who are unvaccinated might get some protection from wearing a mask. I mean, the message that I have received just personally, it has been largely that wearing the mask is to protect others if you could potentially be spreading the coronavirus. Is your department sending a message to the public that yes, wearing a mask can also protect you?
Yes, thank you for this question. I think the science has become increasingly clear that you know, our understanding has evolved over time. So initially, the message was, my mask protects you. Mm-hmm. But what we have seen with data and studies and just looking at countries with high rates of masking is that it protects both the wearer. It also protects the people around them. So there is both a benefit to me as an individual to wearing a mask, as there is to the people around me. And it becomes important to wear what we're calling a well-fitting mask. And, you know, clearly this could be something like an N95 respirator. We heard a lot about the scarcity of those at the beginning of the pandemic. But even if it's not fitted in the same way, a medical evaluation and a fitting the way that it's done for healthcare workers, it's still a very good mask and does protect you as well as the people around you. Or even if you don't have that, it could be wearing a surgical mask and a cloth mask over it and making that fit as well as it can be, making the fit very tight around your face so there's not a lot of gaps. So wearing that well-fitted mask does certainly protect you as the wearer as well as the people around you.
Do you have, I realize this is now like very, very specific and detail oriented, so if you don't have this answer, that's fine. But do you have any guidance around how frequently one could, or how many times one could reuse a surgical mask? Because they seem to be made to be disposable, but also, you know, we're not wearing them. Mostly people aren't wearing them in surgical settings. We're just wearing them mm-hmm. around.
Yes. And, you know, I don't think that we have official DPH guidance on like the number of times. Mm. But what we do say is that it's generally okay to reuse the mask as long as you examine it and there's no problems with the integrity of the material. If you don't see visible soil or wetness to the mask, it's fine to reuse. And we think in practical terms, many people do use their mask, you know, for a couple of days or while it sort of seems to be still intact and fine. Mm. And it's generally not a problem to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I have one more for you along those lines, which is another thing I've heard is that these neck gaiters, very thin fabric that people use to cover their nose and mouths, that in some cases has been shown to be less effective than no mask at all, which seems super counterintuitive to me. But do you know anything about that?
Well, this was a study that got some media attention because it was super counterintuitive to think that using something like a gaiter or a scarf tied around your nose would actually be less protective. I think that this was a single study, and in science and in public health, we don't really create policy based on a single study. Mm-hmm. But we have said that this is our messaging around well-fitting masks. We definitely want to move away from what we were saying at the beginning, which was, you know, just use a scarf, use whatever you have, because that's the information and the knowledge that we knew at the time. And we've moved towards saying, you know, actually use a well-fitting mask. You could be a cloth mask. It could be a surgical mask. But just use a mask that has multiple layers to it and that you could fit well to your face. So in general, I think that single layer gaiters or other things like that are not as good of a protection for yourself or for others. So I would recommend against wearing them. Mm-hmm. I don't have a specific comment on that one study. And we haven't seen a lot more studies coming out that replicated that finding. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. I think the good news and the takeaway that I want people to have at this point in time is, you know, if you're out running, walking with your dog, with your friends, you don't need to have a mask outside any longer, which I think is a really big thing.
Yeah, it definitely is a relief for some people. However, on that note, I do still see a lot of people still wearing their masks when they're out doing those things or pulling them up on the sidewalk when their paths cross with another pedestrian. And I have to confess, I mean, I do it. It's almost kind of a signal to others. I've seen this in you know, media reports that people are trying to show that they're conscious of the pandemic and they don't want to spread it to others. And they don't want to necessarily have to be guessing about other people, whether they've been fully vaccinated or not, or how big the risk is. But it's also now known that transmission in passing seems to be not really a factor. What is that hesitancy to just shed the mask entirely, you know, outdoors while distancing from people tell you about how San Franciscans as a whole are coming at this? Do you gather anything from hearing that?
Well, I will say that, you know, this is a new habit that we've all learned. Yeah. And we did not used to be a city of mask wearers in many neighborhoods. In some neighborhoods, yes, there's always been a culture of mask wearing. And we know in other countries, there have been cultures of mask wearing as well. Mm. And so in the beginning, it was a visible sign. And we framed it as such. We said, this is a sign of, you know, your commitment to the health of the city and the health of the people around you. And I think that was very powerful framing. And we have seen what an amazing job, I can't say it enough, an amazing job that San Franciscans have done in following our health orders, in following the guidance and listening to the science and doing the things that have kept the city safe and have saved so many lives in San Francisco. So that's amazing. Those are the behaviors that have we have interpreted those behaviors as keeping us safe. And we're in a new era now with vaccine and with case rates falling. And so that's why this masking guidance has changed outdoors. We no longer have to do it. But those old habits that, you know, we held on to throughout these many, many months of the pandemic are hard to let go. And so I'm glad you're giving me a chance to talk about this, because what I want to say is that I just encourage people, as you have shown consideration and kindness for your fellow San Franciscans this entire time through the pandemic, we have to do that now when people are choosing to appropriately follow the guidance and not necessarily wear their masks all the time outdoors. I've heard stories from community members about being yelled at for not wearing their mask. I mean, just in the last day or so since the order has come out. And being told that they are being inconsiderate and people getting very upset with them. And it's important to understand that they are not doing anything that is against our guidance. They are actually following what's allowed in the guidance. And those changes were made by me as the health officer because it's permissible to do that now and still keep ourselves safe, keep each other safe. And so there are some people that want to continue wearing a mask for multiple reasons. You know, it was really cold this morning, so having the mask on can be more comfortable sometimes, and people like it for other reasons. It's also going to take a while for us to get out of the habit of wearing it, and some people have said that they feel a sense of safety with wearing the mask and seeing others with the mask. So I think we're all going to have to extend a lot of understanding and grace for where people are on this, and don't yell at anyone for wearing a mask, and do not yell at anyone for not wearing a mask outdoors. And we should all focus our energy on indoors, making sure we're masked. And we should definitely all focus our energy on encouraging our neighbors and our friends to get vaccinated if they haven't already.
Well, Dr. Phillip, thank you so much for walking me through all this.
Well, thank you. I really appreciated spending the time talking with you.
That was Dr. Susan Phillip, Health Officer of the City and County of San Francisco. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Civic is produced at KSFP LP 102.5 FM in San Francisco. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Our team includes producer and contributor Mel Baker and assistant producer Liana Wilcox. KSFP is a project of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Find our reporting at sfpublicpress.org.